value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Good day, everyone. I'm Ron Insana, and welcome to the U.S. Lens. It's a time to talk about where we are in the recovery cycle with specific regard to the Delta variant of the coronavirus, which has slowed the global economy in ways that no one had anticipated just a few short months ago. Are we about to reemerge from the COVID variants and move forward with our economic recovery, or are we stuck in a place that has yet to show signs of improvement? Joining me now to talk about that with some very important data is Mark Ainsworth. He is head of data insights and analytics at Schroders. Mark, thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Before we get into kind of the data dashboard, where are we right now? I mean, we've seen, you know, with respect to even consumer behavior in the United States, which had been quite robust, a bit of a pullback on the retail front. We see overseas China slowing a little bit. We see places like Vietnam having supply chain difficulties because of lockdowns. Where does the world stand right now?
So the key thing that's happened for the world is this Delta variant, and it's such an extremely infectious version of coronavirus. A lot of countries that thought they had a strategy that was going to work have then had to rethink. The kind of COVID zero countries, Vietnam is a good example of that, find that this is really hard to keep on top of. Countries like USA or indeed India that, you know, seem to be on a path towards endemic, towards coronavirus becoming just out there and part of manageable life, suddenly have these big increases. But I think we're seeing the end of the tunnel of the Delta variant now, and I can speak more to that.
Before you get to that, let me just follow up with a question, something that Dr. Anthony Fauci mentioned here, that if the U.S. and other countries, for that matter, do not get their vaccination rates high enough, that we may see additional mutations that could be far more serious and even evade the immunity provided by COVID vaccines. What's the risk of that right now?
It's really hard to quantify that risk, but it is absolutely the case that all infectious diseases, every time they're in anybody's body, mutations can occur. And that's how the virus evolves. And the more bodies a virus is sort of spread across the whole of the world, the more opportunities it has to mutate, and for one of those mutations to be something that gives that virus an advantage, and then it spreads from there. So it is, you know, certainly true. That's always a risk. You know, one of the reasons why we have a flu vaccine sort of booster every year is because, in fact, the version of flu that's circulating is subtly different from one year to another, and that's because of that evolutionary process happening. So that will happen with COVID in the future. I think what we don't know is there some huge leap in infectiousness or immune evasion that, like what we saw for Delta, down the road for coronavirus? We just don't know, but it's absolutely a risk.
All right, so back to the here and now with respect to reopening trends, first in the U.S., where it seems like we've slowed a bit. Retail sales have slowed, depending on the movie. Theater going has slowed, although there have been a couple of hits, irrespective of the concerns around the Delta variant. Post Labor Day, where is the U.S. at the moment?
So I think one really useful indicator to look at is the level of fear in the population. And what we see is that fear level tracks very closely with case numbers. So back in June, the proportion of the US population that was saying they were scared about contracting coronavirus was down to 35%. The highest it ever got was sort of 65%, which was back in the very first wave, back in spring 2020 and at other times. But that number is now back up to 55%. So because case numbers are so high in so many places, there's a lot of people are fearful. And of course, those people are kind of taking opportunities to protect themselves, to stay home. So that's obviously going to have knock-on effects in all sorts of ways.
And there still is in the U.S. a great deal of vaccine hesitancy and even resistance. And it doesn't seem to be improving much. We did have a surge of vaccinations that has now kind of fallen off a bit. So how does that fit into the equation that we're looking at as far as a post-Labor Day recovery?
Yeah, it's, I mean, very, from my position here in England, what's really striking is how politicized the whole situation has been with vaccination. It is generally true that in every country, people who are sort of lean to the right on political views are more in favor of looser restrictions, generally a bit less keen on vaccines. But it's extremely polarized in the USA. And so in a sense, there are the sort of blue states have approaching European levels of overall vaccination. And then in the red states, it's much lower. In reality, the thing that eventually controls the virus is immunity in people's bodies. And people do get that from being infected. So it will sort of all balance out eventually. Everyone will have immunity in their body for coronavirus eventually, you know, looking several years down the line. It's really just a question of whether they have it by vaccination or infection. So that's the key situation.
So when we compare the US to the UK, for instance, which has had its own surges, some vaccine hesitancy, not to the same extent as the US, there's been a lot of talk here on our side of the pond that the UK leads the US by about 4 to 6 weeks with respect to the virus ebbing and flowing. Is that still true? I noticed you referred to it as England. I don't know if you're anticipating Scottish succession, but that's probably a conversation for another day. Does the UK lead, as maybe some other countries do as well, with respect to infection and then improvement rates?
Yeah, so UK is overall 65% of the population is fully vaccinated, and in the USA that's 53%. So it's a good chunk ahead. I think that 4 to 6 week lead time specifically is a good observation about how the Delta variant has been spreading, because of the level of connection between the United Kingdom and India. UK sort of got the first hit of the Delta variant before many other countries. But in terms of overall level of number of people being vaccinated, USA was actually pretty early getting a lot of vaccines in people's arms. It's now the differences are about whether the number of people getting vaccinated continues to go up. And UK is actually kind of, the restrictions are pretty loose now, but it is certainly true, like USA, that a lot of people are staying home. In the UK, people are not back to normal yet. They're kind of easing back. And and sometimes England, Scotland contrasts are very useful to look at. Scotland's schools went back earlier than the schools in England. And it's quite noticeable that cases went up in Scotland shortly after their schools went back when England were going down. So that really helps us understand what's happening. Another thing that happened in the UK that I think is kind of very interesting to understand the dynamics of all this was we had a really big peak in cases, which then fell. And there was lots of discussion about why was it falling? Is that because we've now reached herd immunity? But what had happened was England had reached the finals of the Euro Soccer Championship, and lots and lots of people went to pubs to watch the game. Scotland had a similar peak, but 2 weeks earlier, and that's because Scotland dropped out of the championship two weeks earlier. So we can really tease apart what's going on here by linking to these sort of behavioral factors.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because our football, American football, has just started and stadiums are full again, which is not something that we've seen for well over a year. So should we anticipate then these potential super spreader events have some impact on the US in the same manner that you just described in the UK?
It's a possibility. Actually, so in the United Kingdom, there have been a number of quite structured research exercises where they have science researchers observing some of the big sporting events that have happened and it's sort of somewhat controlled circumstances. And what they found was, for example, in the Wimbledon tennis finals, they had full crowds, but very little infection happening, whereas in the football they had full crowds and they had a lot of infection. And those researchers observed the real explanation of the difference was what happened when people were ordering drinks at the bar. So it's because actually it's still true, the Delta variant of coronavirus, it's an airborne virus. The way people catch out is this, it by spreading in the air. And most big sporting events are big, they're out in the open. It's not in closed spaces. So that's broadly speaking pretty safe. But of course, if you at one point you cram into an enclosed space to queue for drinks, that's the risk point.
on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You're listening to the Investor Download.
Now, with respect to restrictions, which you said have been relaxed in the UK, and to a certain extent, they're relaxed in certain parts of the United States, but it's quite variable here as to whether or not there are mask mandates, vaccine mandates, and the like, and we're going through a great deal of tumult over those particular issues. Do you see a point at which we could see those severe restrictions on individuals that we saw in 2020 with respect to shelter in place, more work from home, et cetera, et cetera?
I mean, I think the journey from now is relaxations. So broadly speaking, the USA case numbers look like they're cresting and they're going down. And importantly, unlike that sort of scenario I was describing with the football championships, the way the different states in USA are peaking is sort of unsynchronized. And that's very characteristic of when the case numbers are peaking because the virus is running out of people to infect. So fundamentally, that does tell you that the total number of people with some immunity in their system is getting to the point where the epidemic is slowing. And so I would expect, broadly speaking, the trend to be downwards now in the USA. And there's a number of other countries where it's a very similar sort of situation. So, for example, in Brazil, Brazil have had a lot of infections. Sadly, a lot of people have died in Brazil. But the combination of a lot of those infections, and they've got 67% of the population at least partially vaccinated, Brazil is now broadly back to normal. And that's because the overall number of people with immunity is close enough to 100%. Now, crucially, the reason why we all had those sort of shelter-in-place restrictions was because there were so many people susceptible to infection of this virus that the number of fresh infections every day was shooting up to very high numbers. But it's now the case, you know, if enough of the population has immunity one way or another, that's never quite going to happen again. Now, there may be, the case numbers may go up. It may cause hospitals to get full and stretched. But, you know, back in, you know, last year, there were genuinely, hospitals were in danger of being completely overwhelmed. We saw that happen in India, sadly. Recently, but is now the case in India. Two-thirds of the population have antibodies. And in India, broadly speaking, people are back to normal. So I think that sort of stuff that happened to us all back in spring last year, I don't think it'll happen again.
Now, there's some discussion that given what's going on in the southern states where it's warm, that we could see a migration of the virus to the north when it becomes cold in the winter, and that we get another surge, even though vaccination rates in the north and the northeast in particular tend to be better than in other parts of the country. Are we going to see this continue kind of on a rolling basis that will have regional impacts both on our health and also on economic activity?
My expectation is that what we'll see is it's really about the rate of decline of cases. So you can already see that in the places that had very high case rates in the middle of summer, like Louisiana and Florida and Mississippi, they're now seeing cases falling. And the places like, you know, West Virginia, Pennsylvania are seeing cases going up. And that I would put down to weather differences. And crucially, those places that I mentioned that had very high case numbers in the middle of summer, those are places that are both very hot and very humid. And fundamentally, it's just not nice to be out in that kind of weather. And so people, when they meet and socialize, will do so indoors. And going back to my earlier point, coronavirus is airborne, so it's all about whether people socialize indoors or not. And so I absolutely would expect that, case numbers in those northern states probably will go sideways, where, you know, every day a few more people have immunity from being vaccinated, from being infected, and that will probably be balanced out by it bit getting colder and people slightly more often meeting indoors, whereas those hot states, they've gone past the peak. It's going down from now. I don't think we'll see sort of big cases, but for sure there's a part of this that's explained by weather.
What about the booster? So this is a big issue even as we speak today in the United States, and in places like Israel, they're already calling for a fourth shot after a third. There's a great deal of debate as to whether or not the side effects from a booster might cause something like myocarditis or inflammation of the heart. And even a couple of FDA staffers resigned over what is perceived to be a plan by the Biden administration here in the U.S. to offer third shots to the general public, even those who aren't necessarily immunocompromised. What is that third shot all about?
So what is clear is that there is evidence that people's immunity does wane, and your body's immune system has sort of two layers. There's the front line, which is the antibodies circulating in your bloodstream. And then there's various other sort of memory cells that remember how to make those antibodies. The evidence is that your body remembers probably for decades how to make those antibodies, but it doesn't necessarily keep them floating in your blood. And that's what needs to be true for to kind of make sure that you don't catch the thing again. So what's very clear is that people, that sort of frontline immunity does wane gradually, more so for old and vulnerable groups. And giving a third dose tops it back up again. So third doses are effective. That's clear in evidence from many countries. And I think a really interesting point of reference here is the hepatitis B vaccine. So hepatitis B, is another infection. And it is what we now know is that three doses is the number of doses people need to receive to have full immunity. And in a sense, that's a key thing that researchers are learning in the process of all the trials they do when they're researching new vaccines, is how many doses does it take for your body to have the necessary immunity to this thing. And I think it's fair to say that the Delta variant appears to be a three-dose vaccine virus. And whether people need fourth doses is another matter, but it's clear that that sort of waning effect, if a government's target is to stop the virus spreading at all, I think we can expect lots of governments to conclude that they should give third doses to lots of their population. I think there's obviously a big debate here about the global fairness of that. Almost everyone in Africa has no vaccine at all, and there's a sort of global unfairness to that. But I think most governments, they do what their voters want them to do, and I imagine that will create a dynamic in which many countries will give third doses to large portions of the population.
Does that take us back to pre-pandemic normal?
I think it will. Yes, I think it will. I think what we may find is that well-planned health systems need a bit more capacity to handle winter peaks. I would very much expect coronavirus to be like other airborne infectious viruses that peak in winter. There's a level of waning in the population at all times. There's new mutations emerge, and it'll be like flu, and this will be a thing that comes every winter to some degree. And if it's happening on top of flu, that may mean that basically hospital systems need a bit more capacity to handle the peak when it comes. But other than that, I expect we will be returning to normal, and this will become something much more like flu.
And unless Moderna has the COVID flu combo that works, as they claim at the moment.
Yeah, practically speaking, there's a huge logistical challenge of administering these things to such a large portion of the population. So those sorts of developments are clearly going to be very appealing to the governments to sort of ease the process of doing that.
Now, final question on zero COVID countries. What does that mean exactly? I mean, we've seen, obviously, countries like Israel try to get it down, and then it popped back up. Vietnam and some Far Eastern countries had great success early on and saw their case levels pop back up. China is locked down recently, a city of 4.5 million people, as it deals now with the Delta variant. What is a zero COVID country? What's the meaning behind that expression?
So essentially, there's two ways of having a virus like coronavirus be not a threat. One is just have it not exist in the population at all. And the other is for the population as a whole to have enough immunity that cases don't grow. And obviously people have heard talk about the R number. If one person catches it, how many other people do they infect? So there's the only way of stopping cases growing is either that there's so many people with immunity that most of the people you might spread it to are immune and it just doesn't grow, or you start with zero. And zero has that magic number. Zero multiplied by however much stays at zero. But as a strategy, that requires you to stay at zero. And so everyone who might try to visit your country has the potential to seed one case, and that case becomes three cases, and three cases becomes nine cases, and so it spreads. But that's a strategy, that's not an end strategy at all. The end strategy for every country has to be that every population has enough immunity that coronavirus can spread. You know, no country can be isolate itself from the rest of the world in perpetuity. So what's very clear is countries like Vietnam and New Zealand and China are going to have to go in a transition from a state where they protected their population by just keeping the virus at zero. And to be clear, like, people in New Zealand have been merrily going to football matches and having parties for most of the last year and a half, because they successfully had that strategy. But it's going to be a wrenching change for those countries. There's a message of, this is a thing that is so dangerous, we have closed our borders. But Brazil, and, you know, USA is on this journey, is a country where, you know, this is not something to worry about, because it's become endemic. It's become another one of those illnesses that spreads around just like the cold and the flu and all sorts of other things. So that's going to be huge, a painful transition. China's an interesting one, because China have actually now vaccinated about as many people in the whole population as some of the most vaccinated European countries. And so at some point in the future, they'll need to sort of make that switch. In theory, as long as the vaccines they've given to people are effective enough, it should be true that somebody who is infectious with coronavirus could arrive at a Chinese city, and there's just so many of the people they encounter are already immune from the vaccine, and so it just won't spread, and it's nothing to worry about anymore. Mm. But that's going to be a huge transition culturally, administratively, and China has to do that. All these COVID zero countries will need to make that transition.
All right, Mark, a pleasure talking to you. Thanks for all your insights today. I do appreciate it. Mark Ainsworth is Head of Data Insights and Analytics at Schroders. I'm Ron Ansana. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll be back with another U.S. Lens in the very near future.
Well, that was the show. We very much hope you enjoyed it. If you want to find out more, check out our website, schroders.com/theinvestor download. You can also get in contact with us about anything in the show or ideas for future shows at schroderspodcast@schroders.com. Please remember to subscribe to us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to leave a review. We're now doing one show a week, which will be available every Thursday from 5 p.m. UK time. Thanks very much for listening, but above all, keep safe and go well. Cheers.